This is an interview with Wendy Thompson by Caroline Pascoe with Katie Murphy recording for the Women's Information Service Oral History Project at the State Library for South Australia on Wednesday, the 31st of January, 2018. Hello, Wendy. Thank you for coming in.
Hi.
Can you give us a brief overview of when and where you were born and grew up, please?
Sure. I was born in January 1966 in Elizabeth. I grew up mostly there, moved over to Bangkok, followed my dad with work, lived there for a couple of years, and then ended up back in Elizabeth when I was about 9 or 10.
And stayed there and had your schooling there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
And when did you start working or volunteering at WIS?
I got a casual contract position, and that was in 1996 when we were in Kintore Avenue days. So I think Margaret Porter was the manager then, and it was, 3 months, and then I left to take up a business opportunity in Queensland.
What were you doing in Queensland?
I bought into a bottle shop.
Ah, right, okay. It's a bit different.
It was. I didn't like it.
So then you're going to go on and tell me that you came back, which it wasn't just 3 months that you worked for us, yes?
Yeah. So I worked initially for 3 months, and then I think I disappeared for about, just trying to look it up here, for about 3 years. And then I came back as a volunteer, and then got a project officer job. And that was in 1999, and then I was made permanent in August of 99 as a project officer, information officer.
Information officer, and you came back to the
railway arcade. Moved at that stage, right. Yeah. So moved while I was gone.
So how did you come to go to WIS in the first place, and what kept bringing you back?
I just loved it. I felt at home there, and I felt as if everything that I believed in and wanted to achieve from a social point of view, it was all happening in that place. It was a really supportive environment to work in. The women were fabulous, and it was, you could do what you wanted to do and how you wanted to do it, kind of, and what I wanted to do fitted into the model of WIS, and I loved it. It's like I found myself, I found my wings.
So you had a degree of autonomy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And who was your coordinator at the time?
Margaret. The first time was Margaret Porter,
yes,
and then
said.
When I came back, it was Linda...
Forrest?
Yeah.
Forrest. Okay. So the first time you got involved, it was Kintore Avenue. So you just answered an ad, or you walked past and saw it?
No, it was it was a bit like an Adelaide moment where the woman I was working with at the time, her partner worked at WIS, and there was an opportunity for a 3-month contract to come up, and I wrote an application for that. Got an interview, totally and absolutely bombed at the interview. But the manager, who Margaret Porter, knew one of my referees, and called up the referee and went, "Surely she can't be that bad." Yeah. And she went, "Nah, look, she was obviously just nervous. You know, it's 3 months. I think you should give her a go." So I did, and the rest, they say, is history. So.
Were you a feminist at that time? Did you?
Absolutely.
So that was the backbone of your application and your desire to work there. Okay. So what were the days like? What was your typical day? Say when you were at Kintore Avenue first.
We were all in the same room. So the phones were in one kind of corner, and there were 4 desks back to back, and that's where the volunteers sat. And then it was at the head of the table where the kind of paid staff member sat, and then the project information officers sat kind of just away a little bit from the room. And it was the start of the internet as well, so it had just come about. So there was brochures everywhere, there was an area where people would walk kind of in and could take a seat and grab a cup of tea or coffee and have a look around, and it was all everyone could see everything that was happening in any one given time.
But what were you using to find your information at that stage when you joined?
It was cards and folders that we that were made up, and there was very few kind of websites at the time. So the internet was something that wasn't really used. There was a database, but that wasn't an online database. That was done through it was. I'm trying to remember. They were on computers, but it wasn't internet-based, so it must have been a program that was downloaded on each of the computers.
And uploaded by Women's Information Service or someone?
We paid for that.
You paid for it, so it was done from someone else. And you said that you had the coordinator there and then the volunteers, and you seemed to be sitting somewhere a little bit differently, a little bit away from that?
Yeah, so you were the paid staff. There was someone that was rostered on to oversee the calls that were coming in and anyone that was walking in. And then if you weren't rostered on for that, then you were working on kind of project work. But because I was only there for 3 months, I didn't have a specific project. So mine was all about kind of tidying up the shop front, organising some of the written pamphlets that were coming in. That kind of general stuff,
not policy or anything like that.
Not at that stage.
Did you answer the phone or talk to you? Did that well when you were rostered on to be the paid staff member? You'd be taking a phone call.
Yeah.
Who took the first phone call or did? I mean,
it was the volunteers generally.
That's an obscure question, but you know that now that if the phone rings, the volunteer answers the phone, even if there are two paid workers in the office, she'll answer the phone.
And it was still the case then. It's just if the phones were busy, then you kind of got the overflow from there.
Then you get that. Would you listen out to what was going on and maybe
absolutely.
Try and, yes, as happens these days.
Yeah. Yes. And then it was the legal service that was offered, I think, was that on a...
The Women's Legal Service?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was on a Tuesday night, I think.
Yes.
And was it on a Saturday as well?
Tuesday night and Saturday morning when I came, so I guess that was
happening. So we just used to work back on a Tuesday and do it that way as well. I don't think any volunteers did that, though. We used to stay back on a roster and do that.
Okay. Who was the director then, do you know, for the office?
Carmela Lachlan.
Carmela Lachlan, okay.
And I think they were still in Roma Mitchell House at that point. But we were in Kintore, and every time we had a meeting, we had to walk down the road.
That was a long way away. So if they had a meeting, you had to walk over there. Yep. Did they come over there much to Kintore Avenue? Do you were aware
not,
of them?
Not that I saw. But, I mean, I was only there for 3 months as well, so...
Okay. All right, now we'll go on to when you came back.
Just going back to Kintore, we used to have Friday drinks after work, and we called ourselves the Lush Club.
The Lush Club?
Yeah, the photo that I've got is a meeting of the Lush Club.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you, do you have memories of the time shared with other workers and volunteers at Kintore Avenue and then in the other place, but say at Kintore Avenue? So that's one. Any others that you shared with? Did the volunteers come to the Lush Club?
I don't think so, because it would have been after work on a Friday. So, I mean, if whoever was rostered on Friday afternoon, like it wasn't an exclusive thing, it was just whoever was there, kind of after work on a Friday.
They could have come
if
there wasn't any...
Yeah, it wasn't a formalised thing. It just kind of happened.
And where did you go?
Oh, we stayed in Wiz.
Yeah. But had a drink?
Yeah.
An alcoholic drink?
Absolutely.
To be clear?
Yes.
Any food?
Not that I remember.
That's great. Okay, so now we move on to Station Arcade when you came back. And you came back as a volunteer.
So. Yeah. So I moved back to Adelaide after living in Queensland, and I loved my time there so much that I wanted to kind of work there again. But one of the reasons I'd come back from Queensland is because my health wasn't great, and there was no way I could kind of work full time. And I applied for a position and there was none around, so I went back as a volunteer and was happy to do that and kind of build my health up. Did that.
So who did you approach to come back?
Linda Forrest.
Linda Forrest.
Yeah.
And did you have to do a training course with the others, or did you just come back because you had worked there?
I think I just came back because I had previously worked there. Okay. Yeah.
And what did you do when you were at Station Arcade in that 3 months as volunteer?
I can't actually remember how long I volunteered for. I don't think it was actually very long. And then I became a casual. And then there was a position within OFW for a policy kind of support officer. And I moved over there and was doing paid work there.
So what was your function at... You worked in the shop front and the phone room, I take it, and yep. You just did the normal... It worked that we know still from today.
Yeah.
So you had your shift in the phone room and then, okay.
Yeah, shift out the front. Mm.
And so how long do you think you were there and then before you moved to policy?
It was only a couple of months, okay. I think. Yeah. I think so. I'm not 100% sure. So, yeah, no, that was January 99. So I would have came back, at the beginning of 99. And then by the end of 99, I had got employment.
And how long were you up with OFW?
Not long. I think I was only there for about 9 months. Yeah, and then won the information officer job within WIS and became the volunteer coordinator at that point.
And the volunteer coordinator. Okay. So were you dissatisfied with your work? I mean, you've moved from various parts. Was that just seen as a trajectory of your work? Or
There were never any kind of permanent positions, so I just went out to kind of help. I think it was the woman's... It was the Women's Network, Women's... there was a group that was formed. What was it?
Not the Women's Support Group, Women's Information Support Group.
No, it was the Women's Network or something or other. I'd have it written down somewhere at home.
Was that made up of various people like Women's Health Service and those sorts of things?
Yep.
Women's Legal Service and... Okay. And what did you do with
and
them?
Business as well. So I was just the admin officer. So I took minutes and coordinated meetings and, prepared documents.
And as the Women's Information Service coordinator, what was your role there?
As what, sorry?
When you were the coordinator, the manager of Women's...
Oh, okay. So
what was it called, coordinator or manager?
Manager.
Yeah. Manager, sorry. It swaps. I've been there 15 years and sometimes it's a coordinator, it seems to me, and sometimes it's the manager. But however, you were the manager.
Maybe
right?
That's judged on how much they're going to pay them, on the level of responsibility.
I don't understand that, but yes.
I know that the manager before me also did policy work and got paid at a level higher than what I got, but I didn't do the policy work attached to that. So I think that's how they did it from a public sector, the ASO levels. I think that's how it works out.
Okay.
And then I think they dropped it down after I left as well.
So can you fill us in on what you did as the Women's Information Service manager?
Mostly I managed people, and it was more about the management of the volunteers and the staff, because there was about, I think there was 25 volunteers at the time and 6 paid staff, and so a lot of it was, coordinating that and then just overseeing what the role was of WIS and just trying to keep that relevant and feeding into other services and promoting WIS amongst other government kind of agencies and spreading the word throughout the state to community-based services.
So your role would be to make it a viable concern with the idea that it might lose funding? Was that the thing at the back
Look
of your mind?
I think it was... WIS was originally formed because women had a very limited capacity to get information, and the internet was kicking off, and a lot of the reasons why WIS had formed in the first place was becoming null and void. So I had such strong belief that WIS was still important, but it was how does it fit into the new world of technology, and how do you continue to be able to identify what women need and be able to provide that as well, yeah, and to secure funding, yeah.
So can you just make a summary of that, of how WIS has changed over the years? Because you had the terrific advantage of volunteering very early on and then coming back and seeing it. And well, you know people there now, so you know what's going on today, really. So you've been around for a while.
Yes,
because
I'm old. So I guess, and I hadn't actually really thought about this before, I'm articulating it now, is that when I first started, the internet was... in its, you know, infancy, and then it kind of took off. So the way that society was getting their information was totally different, and growing, and how WIS had to remain relevant in that spot. Because if it didn't change, then it was just going to become, yeah, to serve what purpose? And why would the state government want to fund a service that was irrelevant? And yet... there's still a need for a service such as this. So how do you change it in an environment and society that's changing, that it still becomes relevant and still meets the needs of what women need? And so part of that was to go around, and this is the work that I did a lot with kind of Fiona Mort, who was manager of policy of OFW at the time. So it was Lindy McAdam when I first started, and then Fiona took over that. And we did a lot of going around the country and asking women what's important, and a lot of that was based around the women's safety strategy and the engagement around that, and the offset of that, and the reason why I was there is just to listen and learn and find out and think and talk about new ways of keeping WIS relevant.
So just it's another question along those lines, but can you remember the sorts of queries you had at Kintore Avenue and the sorts of queries you had at Station Arcade? The difference?
No. I don't know if there was a difference at that point. It was predominantly around safety and a lot of legal advice around divorce, separation, child support, how to go about anything, really. So, I mean, there was no access to information. So, you know, you couldn't jump on Google and find out anything. It wasn't around. It wasn't there.
So you've talked about going out and trying to make keep Women's Information Service or relevant. Women's Information Switchboard first, and then Women's Information Service, relevant and funded, and with the people, the staff and the volunteers. And you spent some time. Do you remember how much time you spent in that the shop front or and phone room? You spent a lot of time out, and probably up in. Did you have an office up in?
Yeah, so
OFW?
We were when I first started. We were on level 12. Of Roman Mitchell, and then we moved down to level 3, I think. Mm-hmm. And this was, so the department, we were in Dutupa when I first started, so the Department of Transport, Urban Planning and the Arts, and then, because we used to follow the minister around, it was Minister Laidlaw at the time. But, I mean, OFW was doing some really amazing things, so... and this is the help with the minister. They had actually set up a childcare service, like in Roman Mitchell House, for the women that worked in the building and across Dutupa, and that was all done through OFW.
Well, who was the person in charge of OFW at that stage?
Carmel O'Loughlin.
Carmel O'Loughlin, then.
Yeah. Mm. And it was Rachel Myers. Who was did a lot of the legwork around that. Yeah. And at the time, having at work-based childcare was fantastic. And even because I went to work for the Department of Transport, and I was recognised through my position at WIS through there, and it still gets talked about. I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about how fantastic it was during school holidays that they could take their children there, get minded at work. They'd go down, have lunch with them, and then go back to work. And it was all on level two in the big, it used to be the cafeteria, and that, is now just office space. It's not even there anymore. But it was this huge area that had the balcony and all of that kind of stuff.
Did they pay for it? The parents pay for the child?
I was never that kind of involved with it, but there would have been some kind of payment, I reckon.
So getting back to this, you've said that sort of has influenced you a bit in your later career. Were there other things that you think you took with you from the Women's Information Service?
Yeah, look, I think I took everything with me because, the reason why I left, I think, is because I just had only been in the public sector in the Office for Women, and it's a small unit and doesn't really represent the wider public sector. And I thought the best thing that I could do for WIS is to broaden my experience in the way the public sector works. So I kind of left. One, I needed a bit of a change anyway, but I wanted to see how the big boys played. So I went to a big department, transport, predominantly men, and I just wanted to learn how it all worked. And I thought I'll get experience for a year or two and I'll go back to where I really belong. Yeah, back in the women's movement. And well, it's 12 years on and I'm still playing with the big boys.
So it was 12 years ago when you left,
I think so.
Finally.
It was about 2005. I left
2005. Yeah. Okay. And still talking about the Women's Information Service and your involvement, did you have team meetings or staff meetings?
Were
volunteers involved in that?
We used to have a volunteer rep, and I'm trying to think who that was at the time. I think it was you.
It was
a bit towards the end.
That was about when I became the volunteer rep, I think. I came to that. Yeah. Okay. Now something different. The type of women, the sorts of women that used both the switchboard and the service. Can you remember the varieties? We're talking about, you know, maybe different ethnic women, Aboriginal women. Older, younger, that sort of...
Yeah, look, I think there was a big difference between the Kintore Avenue days and the Station Arcade days. Moving to Station Arcade was a really good move because it gave us a public face. So unless you knew where we were in Kintore Avenue, you know, there was a little sign on the window saying Women's Information Service and there was nothing to suggest it was, you know, anything more inside. But giving a shop front, having it all glass on the front where you could have different displays and different promotion for, you know, any kind of different event or kind of issue at the time really opened it up. And so you got a lot more different types of women because they'd walk past it every day coming in and out of the train station. And it just made us more accessible, which was a really good move.
And you had the YAP program, the computer program, which brought in older women, would you say?
Yeah, I can remember also when, and this was one of the best promotions that ever happened, and this was the minister's suggestion at the time, and we all thought, well, yeah, that's just fucking ridiculous. It was when ATMs were kicking off, and there was a lot of pushback from older people not trusting to put a card into a wall and get money out. So we organised with a bank, I can't remember what bank, it might have been NAB, I reckon, and they bought an ATM into the shop front. There was a big promotional campaign where you could come in and ask questions and have a practice at it and, yeah, look at internet banking and have a go at the internet all the time at the same time. And we got, like, a lot of media coverage out of that. And there was this ATM sitting in the middle of the shop front. And there was generally older women and some men that came in and they just wanted to speak to someone and have a look at it and play with it so they weren't intimidated before going to an ATM.
So it was well used by women and men. Men were welcomed in there too.
Yeah.
Has that been different? Has that changed over the years, do you think, with the men coming in? What about Kintore Avenue? Do you ever see a man come into Kintore Avenue?
No, never. never. I think it was, I don't know, like public perception wise, it went from being a community based organisation to an open, more mainstream kind of service, which is where it kind of needed to be as well. And it just made it more accessible to more, yeah, people felt more welcome, I think, to come in. And the decor had a lot to do with that, because I think at the time, Carmel was criticised for the amount that was spent on the look and the feel of Wiz in the station arcade, but it worked. Yeah. It mainstreamed us a bit.
Can you talk about Wiz being involved in the community and perhaps remember some of the things that went on there that you were part of?
So I did a lot of functions with, so there was Women's Information Service, there was Women's Health Statewide and the Working Women's Centre. So it was Lisa Moody from Women's Health Statewide and Sandra Dan from the Working Women's Centre. And the three of us went to a lot of rural kind of gatherings. So every year we'd go to the Rural Women's Gathering and then we'd kind of do other functions throughout the year, and we'd go as this trio. And I have lifelong friends with those two women now, and the memories of the Rural Women's Gathering are pretty fantastic. But that's more on a personal kind of level. Yeah. But
it was what about meetings in Adelaide? Did those sorts of things happen?
Yeah. So as the manager of WIS, I was also on the management committee of the Women's Legal Service as well, so had input into that, and was also on, there was a women's group tied with Multicultural SA, I'm trying to think of the name of the group, but I had a seat on that table as well, and again, it was all about trying to identify the emerging needs of women as there was a lot of new arrivals coming through, and feeding that information back to make WIS relevant to the needs of the women at the time.
I think there are other different expos or exhibitions around town. Were you involved in those too, or was it just when you were...
I felt like I was doing them all the time, but trying to actually go back now and think what they were. There was the obvious ones, like the Rural Women's Gathering.
And then the Homeless Expo, was there that sort of thing
I never did. I went to some meetings for homelessness, but there was... I think we kept changing departments when I was there, and so every time we changed a department, I had to go and be representative on a whole pile of kind of different committees within that department. And again, it was just about trying to tap in to see what they could offer WIS, and we could offer them.
From what you're saying, you were the face of WIS, but did the staff or the volunteers go out on these things? Can you remember?
Oh, yeah.
They did too.
Yeah, so we, and again, I didn't do this, we had an outreach service. There was one in Gawler, I reckon, at the library in Gawler, and then there was one down south, but I think that was through the Southern Women's Community Centre, I reckon. Elise would know that. I think that she used to do a lot of that. And Kate Horton used to do all of the Gawler one as well.
Was the Family Court Service there when you were manager? Did that come in later?
That was coming in as I left, I reckon. So I think it was... It was just being kind of developed. Because I'm trying to rack my brain now. I reckon that I had something to do with trying to find out the legal implications of, of providing that service. I think, yeah. So I'd left by the time it got set up, I reckon.
I've been told that it happened in Kintore Avenue occasionally. Women had to go to court and some volunteer, maybe staff, I don't know, went with them to court, but it was on a more an ad hoc basis. It wasn't a formally organised thing as it's become.
Yeah, yeah. So, and again, I think that's indicative how WIS has changed. It was a community-based service, and it was almost there was, you know, a need, and so you just went out and did it. And then, you know, the women that came before us started to become aware of some kind of level of safety and responsibility and health and safety and welfare and the risk that we were putting ourselves in at the time. And then we got sucked into the public sector proper, really, and had to abide by all of their rules, where before we kind of sat outside of all of that.
I've been told by someone that worked at Kintore Avenue that occasionally Kintore Avenue was used as a handover children. Is that your memory of it?
I never saw any of that, but I did hear, yeah. I mean, there's so many different kinds of wrong in what was kind of went down, but you can understand there was a need, and so you just go and do it. But, you know, different time, different place.
Things have changed.
Yeah.
Do you know how much? Do you know much about the Women's Information Service support group and the role it played in supporting WIS?
Yeah. Yep. I do. So they used to meet. Was it on a Wednesday? It kind of springs to mind. So I think Fliss Lord was the coordinator there, and they were a really good resource if you had an idea and you wanted to run something past them. They would quite openly and bluntly give you their opinion, which was really useful. Or if they saw something that they didn't really like, they used to kind of pop up and tell us what they think.
Something about Women's Information Service that they didn't like. What sort of things? Any examples of that?
It was more about the look and the feel of the place and the services that got provided, or if we stopped providing a service for whatever reason, it was we kind of had to justify it to them, and they were my benchmark as well. So if I couldn't articulate why we were doing or not doing something, and to the support group, then I didn't have a hope in hell of actually trying to get it through anyway. So
as a support group, do you think that they would have had your back if there'd been any thought that the funds might have been withdrawn?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and they had their fingers in a whole pile of different networks, and they could have like rallied the troops quite quickly. Are they still around?
I'm not sure. I certainly don't see Fliss as much. And where we used to take calls to say whether or not someone was attending a meeting, we don't do that now. So I'm not sure if they meet elsewhere. But I need to find that out.
I mean, they were an ageing group of women as well. So, and Fliss was by far the youngest. So...
Fliss is being interviewed for this oral history project, so no doubt she'll be talking about that.
She's got a keeping record, so she'll probably be able to give you times and dates where, you know, me not so good.
WIS held several phone-ins on women's issues, such as domestic violence, women's and housing, parental stress, women and disability. Did you participate in any of those or organise any of those during your time?
Look, I was involved in one, but... Were we in the health department? I think we might have been in health department at the time.
It changed.
Yeah.
We've moved several times out of that into
a
DCSI.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, and then I think the Minister for Health at the time, I have no idea who it was, used to make themselves available on the phone. And so we had to hang around in case... they needed to divert any calls through to us I can't remember much more than that. I mean, really testing my brain now.
Can you give me some names of some of the women that you've worked with over the years that maybe have influenced you or made a particular, that you remember particularly?
I think all of the women there influenced in some way, shape or form. I have made lifelong friends with many of the women that I work there. It was a time of incredible support for me, and I think that without working in such a caring, supportive environment, I wouldn't actually be where I am now. And that's everyone. So, you know, from Carmel O'Loughlin to Lindy McAdam to Fiona Moore to, you know, all of the amazing volunteers. And, you know, like we were talking earlier, Libby Coote is still a big part of my life. And, yeah, I now work on a road kind of project, and I answer the phone there, and I have incredible training from my WIS days. But it's amazing that there's a couple of times where Kate Horton, who is a resident within the project area, she's called about an issue, and I've answered the phone. She was going, "Is this Wendy? Wendy Thompson?" And I went, "Yeah." And she went, "Wow." And it's happened 3 times, yeah, on the project, yeah, which is just kind of amazing, really. I think all of them. Yeah, everyone, every single one of them. And they've all come to WIS at a different time in their life to achieve something different. And it's the type of place where you can have a passion for one particular area and just go with it. And, you know, move WIS off to a different area or a different time for a different need. And needs change. And so does WIS.
But you still think WIS is still relevant to the needs of today's women?
Absolutely, absolutely.
In thinking about this, knowing that you were going to do the interview, have you come up with anything that you'd like to say or like to tell us about WIS apart from what you've told us already? Is there anything else you'd like to?
No, I just think that it's this constant, absolute constant struggle to keep WIS relevant, it has to be so adaptable and responsive, not reactive, but responsive to the emerging needs, and to continue to identify what women, and what situation are they in, so you can target their needs. And that gets really tiring, really tiring. And the fact that WIS is, I mean, how old now?
45 years.
Yeah, and still relevant and still going. You know, well done.
That's a wonderful note with which to finish, but I'd just like to ask one more thing. You've been back a couple of times. When are you coming back again? Thanks, Wendy. Thanks very much for talking to us.